This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Shock therapy, electric jolts to the brain to help restore its equilibrium. Not long ago, it was seen as a barbaric treatment that had thankfully gone out of fashion. But according to the new book Shock, electroshock therapy, ECT, has been improved and resurrected and is now as ordinary as a hysterectomy and twice as common as knee replacement surgery. My guests are the co-authors of Shock, Larry Tai and Kitty Dukakis. Tai is a former Boston Globe reporter who now runs a fellowship program for medical journalists. Dukakis has had several rounds of shock therapy, which she says has been effective in treating her severe depressions. She's married to Michael Dukakis, the former governor of Massachusetts, who ran for president in 1988. She wrote about her depressions and addictions to alcohol and pills in a 1990 memoir. Kitty Dukakis, Larry Tai, welcome to Fresh Air. Larry Tai, since you've watched ECT being administered, I'm going to ask you to describe what's done. And then Kitty Dukakis, since you've received ECT, I'm going to ask you for your perspective on what it's like to actually get that treatment. So Larry, let's start with you. What is done to the patient, starting with when they come into the room in which the shocks are going to be administered?
Sure. They come into the room and lots of wires are hooked up to them, hooked up to an EKG, an EEG, monitoring their heart, monitoring their brain waves, monitoring their oxygen level in their blood, all kinds of things to essentially ensure that doctors are monitoring this the same way they would any medical procedure. A patient is then given anesthesia, given muscle relaxant, and by the time they actually have the electrodes put on their head, and the ECT itself is administered, they are unconscious, and the pulse is delivered for a matter of seconds, putting them into a convulsion and hopefully yielding some sort of a psychiatric result. From the moment that they first go under to the time they wake up, which is the time that all of these things are done, the anesthesia, the muscle relaxant, all the testing, it is only 15 minutes, and it's only a matter of a couple seconds that the shock itself is administered.
And to what part of the brain is the shock administered?
It's administered, there are two ways of doing ECT. You can either put the electrodes on either side of the head and have it administered to both sides at once, which is going to create the greatest likelihood of producing a successful convulsion and something that will generate some sort of psychiatric and emotional response, but that's also the way of administering it that's most likely to result in some sort of a memory loss. So very often today, when Kitty has it, for instance, it's administered with both electrodes on one side of the brain and trying to limit the area where memories are stored in terms of the electric pulse that you're getting, trying to limit the memory loss.
What I have is unilateral ECT. What Larry had described earlier is bilateral. So I have it on one side, as he said, on one side of my head. And you asked about, you know, what happened. Larry described that as well as I possibly can because he's watched it and watched it twice, and possibly more than that at this juncture. But I know what's going to happen. I know that I'm going to be put to sleep. And I know that I'm going to wake up and that the depression that had started will be stopped. And that's the important message, that the very first treatment most of the time stops the depression. And then gradually I will begin to feel better.
Do you ever come out of it with pain or headache?
Nothing. One does often have a slight headache. I have not had headaches the last 4 or 5 times I've had treatment. But I remember the first time, and I had been warned that this might happen, I had a slight headache. They gave me some Tylenol, and it was gone within a very short period of time. That is the only manifestation, and the goo in my hair from where the electrodes are placed, that is the only manifestation of having ECT. The other, of course, is there is periodic memory loss, especially around the time of the treatment, usually for a 2-week period pre-ECT and a 2-week period post-ECT, those events that happen during that frame.
Kitty Dukakis, how many ECT treatments have you had?
I've had 8 or 9 all total, and my depressions usually come every 8 or 9 months. That's been the cycle that I've been on. And one of the things one needs to be careful of are the numbers of treatments. I think that there is some evidence that when somebody overdoes the amount of treatments, there can be problems. And that this is not to say that in some cases it is necessary to go over the usual number. I have 6 treatments each time I have ECT, and that is the usual number of treatments. There are some people who need more, but I think one has to be very careful about those numbers.
Do you mean it's a series of 6 treatments for each depression?
Yes, it's 3 times. It's given 3 times a week. In my case, it's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday during a 2-week period. And so that's, for me, it's 6 treatments during a 2-week period.
So just to clarify, when she says she's had it 8 or 9 times, it was 8 or 9 times having each time the set of 6 treatments.
Kitty Dukakis, electroconvulsive therapy had such a bad reputation for so long. People were afraid of it. Why did you decide to try it? How bad were the depressions that you decided to try a therapy that for a while had such a bad reputation?
Well, we had the advantage or disadvantage of having a loved one who had had ECT in the old days. Michael's brother, Stelian, had had the treatment. Michael remembers him being in a very bad way after his treatment. The convulsions in those days were very long. They were without anesthetic. EKGs were not taken. And as a result of Stelian's experience, we were both, although I didn't know him at the time, but certainly had heard from Michael about his experience, we were both reluctant, I guess, at the beginning when we first heard about the treatment to go ahead with it. But I had a full year to think about it, and I knew that, or a little less than a year, it was 9 months. I knew that that was an alternative because the SSRIs or antidepressants were not working for me and had never worked for very long. So I'm one of that category of people, and there are many others like me who, with clinical depressions that cycle, and mine cycled in the old days before ECT for me, every 8 or 9 months.
And how long would those depressions last?
About 4 months, and they were dreadful. That's a long period of time to be out of touch, to be in this deep hole, to not have the energy that I have when I'm feeling well, to not be productive, to not be a part of the real world. And so the effect on my life and that of my family's has been dramatic.
So at what point during a depression do you decide it's time for another ECT treatment?
Well, since I had my first treatment, which was 5 years and 3 months ago, it's oftentimes one of my daughters who will report to Michael that they hear something in my voice that doesn't sound right. And he will come home and question me about how I'm feeling. And that really is oftentimes the beginning. And I'm not as aware as they are, but it is usually the beginning of a depressive period. And I usually will wait 4 or 5, 6 days as this gets worse. I probably should go in earlier, but I keep hoping against hope that maybe it's just a passing situation. I'm cognizant today, I think, much more than I was before, of needing to take fast action. And the reality for me is that there is a real sense of hope with this treatment, that it is something that I don't dread, that I know will make me feel better. And that's what's been so positive in my life, because so many people who suffer with clinical depression have lost all hope.
Larry Tye, what are the different theories about how ECT actually works?
There are a number of theories that have to do with brain chemistry and the idea that ECT could either squeeze certain chemicals out of the brain or that it could prompt certain neurotransmitters, much the way that SSRIs do, to activate in a way that they weren't before. But I actually think that we know as little about how ECT actually works as we do about antidepressants. And to me, the most compelling explanations are actually the ones that patients I interviewed between 100 and 150 people who had had ECT, and they talk about it being a whole lot like kicking a TV set when it's fuzzy and somehow it goes right, and they don't really care much what the process is, and they listen to all the scientific explanations, but they, at a certain point, there are enough scientists who have enough different explanations that to most patients, they say, we care that it works, and we're not convinced by any of the theories that scientists advance as to exactly why it works.
What about the theory that ECT resets the brain in the way that shutting down and then restarting a computer resets it when there's a problem?
That is almost as good as kicking the fuzzy TV set.
It's more high-tech, don't you think? It's more contemporary.
It is. It's wonderful. Much better for this era.
My guests are Kitty Dukakis and journalist Larry Tai. They collaborated on the new book, Shock, about ECT, electroconvulsive therapy, or shock therapy. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guests are Kitty Dukakis and journalist Larry Tai. They've collaborated on the new book, Shock, about electroconvulsive therapy. Larry Tai, you interviewed over 100 people who had ECT. Did you talk to a lot of people for whom ECT wasn't very successful or had side effects that were so problematic they didn't want to continue?
Yes, I talked to people for whom it worked really well, many of whom also had side effects, and they were very troubled by the memory losses that they had, a number of people that I talked to. But the consensus among most of the people that I talked to was that even with the memory effects, that if it was a question of sort of staying alive, these were people, many of whom were considering suicide, and if it was a question of feeling like they were had this deep depression lifted, many of them felt that it was worth even the bad side effects. There was one woman who has permanently lost 6 years of her memory, and only bits and pieces of it have come back, and yet she feels like, on the one hand, she should have been warned better about the potential memory loss, but given the choice of losing memories or losing your life, that for her and for many others, that was a clear choice. There are other people, ECT has many critics out there, and there are others who feel like it didn't do anything for lifting their depression or lowering their mania or whatever their other condition was, and the negative effects of it to them outweighed the positive. But I would say, on balance, more people felt that it worked for them and that they were willing to tolerate the side effects than didn't.
Kitty Dukakis, one of the major side effects you've had, I think the most significant side effect you've had, is some memory loss. What kind of memories are affected by the ECT? And do those memories ever come back after time?
Most of them do. Some of them don't. And I'll give you an example. I had to have treatment. We are out in Los Angeles for 3.5 months every winter. And I had to have treatment when I was out there this last winter. And in the middle of treatment, Michael and I went to Ventura County, to Santa Barbara, and some of the towns around there for several events. One of them was was a luncheon. I remember the two events on either side of the luncheon. I don't remember the lunch. And the lunch was with several dear friends of ours. And is that earth-shattering for me? No. I mean, I have lost that memory. I accept it. It's one of the memory challenges, and that I go on from there. Other times, we have been away on a trip, and I talk about that in the book. And the experience of that trip, all of the wonderful things that my husband tells me about, are fiction for me, because I do not remember anything from that trip. Intellectually, the memory losses are not great, but they are, I call them a nuisance at times, because they're forgetting telephone numbers, forgetting directions. Michael teases me that I was always directionally challenged, so I'm even more so now. But those, it's a trade-off, and I figured that this is going to happen. I'll have some memory losses. They're not enormous in my life.
Kitty Dukakis, how do the side effects of electroconvulsive therapy compare to the side effects of antidepressants? And I know you took a lot of antidepressants before trying ECT.
Well, the only side effect that I've had with ECT is the memory loss. There were many, many side effects with antidepressants, a whole litany of things that would happen. The dry mouth, for example, when I would be speaking publicly, was just more than an annoyance. the loss of libido, which is a part of what happens to many people who take SSRIs, antidepressants, just a whole slew of different things. And with MAO inhibitors, for example, there are certain foods you can't eat, and I went through that. And so that there are lots of side effects that are a part of one's life when one takes these things. And oftentimes, patients are not told about what these side effects could be.
You know, Larry Tai, the side effect of memory loss, as you point out in the book, you can look at that in two ways. One is, well, memory loss is a side effect of ECT. The other way you can look at it is memory loss is indicative of brain damage caused by ECT. Is there a big debate in the psychiatric community about how to look at this?
There's a big debate in the public. Lots of ECT critics charge that this memory loss is reflective of brain damage. And I think in the psychiatric community, there's much less debate, and most people say it's not a question of brain damage. And there are all kinds of studies going back and forth and quite interesting studies refuting the notion of brain damage, but to me it's a question of semantics. I think that something is going on in the brain, no question. Whether we call that damage or whether we call it some sort of a change in brain chemistry and brain function, it happens with all the antidepressants, it happens with antipsychotics, and it happens with ECT. And are we, with all those things, fixing the brain? Are we damaging it? Are we doing something in between that we're not quite sure about? I think it's the latter, and we're not quite sure. And the fact is that none of these are ideal solutions, and someday we hopefully will have that. ECT has its risks. The issue is whether it's going to be around for the people who it's benefited to use and to use without a stigma.
Larry Tai, is there any empirical evidence about the effectiveness of ECT? Are there statistics that you can quote about how many people who take it actually have an improvement that they're satisfied with?
Sure. There's endless empirical evidence in terms of what ECT does on its own in terms of effectiveness and comparing it to some of the most effective antidepressants. Probably the best piece of evidence that summarizes things is ECT can offer an immediate relief to about 3/4 of people with severe depression who take it when it's properly administered. And what that means is it has a better track record than just about anything else out there, than any of the antidepressants it was compared against. The difficulty comes when you start looking at subjective issues of memory loss, and just about everybody says they experience something. Most say that it's not terribly long-lasting, but when you get into some of the side effects, the empirical evidence becomes cloudier. The evidence in terms of effect in dealing with the number one condition it's used for, depression, is quite definitive, and it's about 3/4 of people that feel a positive effect.
My guests are Kitty Dukakis and journalist Larry Tai. They collaborated on the new book, Shock, about ECT, electroconvulsive therapy, or shock therapy. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Kitty Dukakis and journalist Larry Tai. They've collaborated on the new book, Shock, about electroconvulsive therapy, also known as shock therapy. And Kitty Dukakis has received this treatment several times for depression. Hearing you both talk about ECT, it sounds like a pretty effective, pretty pain-free kind of therapy. But it's really, even if you look at it on its brightest side, it's not effective for everyone. Larry Tai, what are some of the age groups and problems that it seems to be most effective for, and one of the ones it seems least effective for?
It's most effective for certain kinds of depression. And the kinds of depression that it works best with are ones where it's severe depression generally caused by a chemical or a biological imbalance. It works best when that depression is accompanied by a psychosis or even a catatonia. It works well with mania. It works generally pretty well with bipolar disease. It also can work with schizophrenia, although not as well as with depression, with epilepsy, even with Parkinson's disease. So those are the things that it's been shown to have the highest rate of success with. It generally is used with people who have treatment-resistant depression. It's only used mainly today as a last resort when people have tried various individual drugs and combinations of drugs and those aren't working and they need something else, and often when they're at a point of suicide. The people who it won't work with, it doesn't work with obsessive-compulsive disorder, substance abuse, anxiety or adjustment disorders. And maybe most importantly, it's important to say to people that it doesn't work with the kind of depression that results from losing a loved one or breaking up in a relationship or the kinds of situational depression that people generally go into and pull out of on their own. It's generally when it's a chemical imbalance and a more deep-seated depression that ECT is used and that has an effect.
Kitty Dukakis, Larry Tai says that ECT is not effective for treating substance abuse-related problems and obsessive-compulsive disorder. Now, you've had plenty of experiences with substance abuse, pills, and alcohol.
Right.
And I'm sure, you know, it's a compulsion you never get rid of. It's just you overcome it day by day. At least that's my understanding of it. So do you feel that the ECT has made you any stronger or weaker or left you exactly the same in dealing with that?
It's a very good question. I feel much stronger in dealing with that. I have been sober for as long as I've been getting ECT. That does not mean that everybody who has depression is an alcoholic or everybody who's alcoholic is depressive. We all are different, and I drank toward the end of all of my depressions before I had ECT. I had not had a major drinking problem before. I had stopped taking amphetamines years before. That's when my depressions really started. But the alcohol came at the end of these cycles of depression. They were almost like a jolt for me. Very different, obviously, than a jolt of electricity from ECT. But it was my way of anesthetizing myself from the terrible pain that I was in. And as a result of feeling better, of being in control at this point, of so much of my life, which I didn't feel when I was depressed before, I have been sober, and I feel very grateful for the treatment and allowing me to be a part of the fellowship that has just helped me so much.
Kitty Dukakis, your husband Michael was the governor of Massachusetts for three terms and ran for president in 1988. If you don't mind, may I be the millionth, perhaps 2 millionth person to ask you one or two questions about the Bernard Shaw question? Would that be okay?
Yes.
As a lot of people will remember, in 1988, during the presidential debates, your husband, Michael Dukakis, was asked by journalist Bernard Shaw this question. If Kitty Dukakis were raped and murdered, would you favor an irrevocable death penalty for the killer? And your husband's reaction was, "No, I don't, Bernard. I think you know that I've opposed the death penalty." What went through your mind when you heard that question?
I was sitting, you know, and there are certain memories that I have of that campaign that are so crystal clear.
In spite of the shock therapy.
Right. And that's one of them. And I was sitting in the front row of that debate, and I remember saying to myself, why has he answered this way? And we got into the car Andrea was with us at the time, and our middle child. And I said, why did you answer that way? And Michael began to realize, I think, as we drove in the car to the next event, that he had not answered this question the way he really felt it and did not personalize this in the way he should have and had been asked the question in his defense so many times in different ways that it was just, sadly, a rote answer. And I think if he could take that question back again today, he would love to be able to do that. But those choices aren't available. And we go on from there. I mean, it's one of those things that happens in a campaign, and one just accepts that a mistake was made. And Michael doesn't make many mistakes, but he certainly made one with that answer.
What would you have liked him to say?
Well, I would have liked him to say about how angry and hurt and horribly affected he would have been by my demise.
And how, in spite of that, he'd still not be for the death penalty.
That's correct. That's correct. I should have added that. Absolutely. But he could have said this in a much gentler, more personal way. And unfortunately, he didn't do that.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for talking with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Kitty Dukakis and journalist Larry Tai collaborated on the new book, Shock, The Healing Power of Electroconvulsive Therapy.